we're trying to do is we're saying you have residential histories of cases and controls, right? You think of a normal case control study, and you have residential histories of those cases and controls. Can we look back through those residential histories and find patterns? Can we find whether those cases at some point 20, 30, 40 years ago in their past lived near one another and hence were a cluster? So we're looking for clusters of cases in their histories where they used to live. And this is a collaborative work which was funded by both NCI and NIEHS. And as required, I have a disclosure slide with none to disclose. So the hope is that by finding these clusters, right, by finding clusters in residential history, we might be able to identify potential hypotheses that might explain those clusters. And in general, this is, you know, the idea of this approach is for diseases where we don't know what's going on. So we're thinking cancers with relatively unknown etiologies, and when we're thinking latency, because we're thinking diseases that take a long time to develop. So cancers seem like a good approach here. The cancer cluster community, I'd say, of academics at least, has been criticized in large part because we send cancer control professionals off on wild goose chases, often based on studies that look at locations at time of diagnosis or time of death. One example is the Long Island breast cancer study. I'm on Long Island right now, where they looked at clusters based on where people were living at time of diagnosis. And frankly, for cancer, I don't think that makes a lot of sense. People move. People move a lot. So really, I think it makes sense to look at these past histories. And we now have some methods that allow us to do this. And I'm going to be talking about these methods called Q-statistics, developed by my colleague in Ann Arbor, Jeffrey Jacquet. One challenge to this approach is essentially this is space-time data mining. And as anybody who's followed the genetics literature and the number of false positives that have emerged from genetic epidemiology, we need to do something about multiple testing when we're doing this type of data mining. So that's some of what I'll be showing today is some of our efforts to address this multiple testing problem. So these Q statistics are an extension. Yeah. Sure, it's very testy. Better? Yeah. So these Q statistics are an extension of the Kuzik-Edwards spatial nearest neighbor test, which was first published, I think, in 1990 or 1991. And essentially what we're saying is for each case, let's count the number of nearest neighbors. So we'll specify three nearest neighbors. And of those three nearest neighbors of each case, how many are cases? If there are two, as you see, as you see right here, we have one case as the nearest neighbor. The value of the Q statistic will be one for this case. And we repeat this for each case, and we repeat this through time. So you can get a sense of the multiple testing, because we're counting the number of nearest neighbors that are cases of each case through time. And there are different versions of this statistic. The one I just described is this first one, this QIKT, which says when and where is there local clustering around a case. So it tells us when and where, which is nice. That's what we want to know. Problem is we're calculating it over and over and over again. So then there are some different types of global statistics. The first is just this QKT, which says when is there global clustering of cases. So it's the sum of this when and where, this QIKT, at each time slice. So it says in 1990, What's the sum of these QIKTs in 1990, and does that suggest, is that high enough to suggest that there was clustering of cases in 1990? Then there's the QIK, which is a type of global statistic, but it's also kind of a local statistic, because it tells us for each individual, are you the center of a cluster in general through your life course? So it's the sum of these local QIKTs. So it's the sum of these, the QIK is the sum of these QIKTs for each person, so for each case. So it sums it up for each person over their life course. And then there's the global QK, which tells us, in general, is there clustering, but doesn't tell us where or when or who. And that's just the sum of these QIKs. So there are these different statistics to help us get a handle, or they were designed to help us get a handle on whether or not clustering is present. And the way we evaluate statistical significance of these statistics is it's very similar throughout much of the spatial epidemiology literature. We have an observed Q star that we calculate. So that's right down here, this observed Q star that we calculate from the observed data. So we calculate our Q statistics from our actual data. Then what we do is we keep the residential histories, but we randomly allocate the case control identifiers onto those histories. So we kind of sprinkle them at random. And we do this many, many, many times to generate then a reference distribution. So the first time we do here is we randomly allocate, and we're doing this for all of the data. I'm just showing an example here of four participants. But we randomly allocate, and we randomly allocate consistent with some underlying null hypothesis. Your null hypothesis might be complete randomization. It might be that individuals who are older are more likely to have cancer. So we can actually randomly allocate so that individuals who are older are more likely to become cases in this random sprinkling process. So then if you see any clustering, it's above and beyond what we already would expect from those known risk factors. So again, trying to get at new hypotheses, new hypothesized risk factors. And we repeat this randomization process many, many times. So here I'm just showing two, but we actually repeat this 99, maybe 999 times to create this reference distribution. We're recalculating the Q statistics for each randomization to create a reference distribution, and we compare our observed Q with this reference distribution. This is what we do in statistics, only normally we assume there's a normal distribution. So here we're generating our own distribution from our data. Now the problem, as I've said, is that especially for the QIKT, the statistic that tells us where and when through time there might be clustering, there's a lot of multiple testing. And in the genetic epidemiology literature, they can resolve small p-values using something like a false discovery rate correction, some type of correction for a p-value. The problem that we have is we're generating these distributions through the number of randomizations. And to resolve small enough p-values, we would need to run 17,000, 50,000, 100,000 randomizations. It's very time-consuming. So the question is, can we find a shortcut to identify a p-value that we can use as a cutoff without having to do something like a false discovery rate correction, which would, it's just impractical. We have a 3,000 case, 3,000 control study in Denmark. The computers, they die. They can't do it. So we need to find some type of a shortcut. And maybe also if we find combinations of these Q statistics, that will help us as well. So what we did was we simulated some clusters, 13 simulated clusters, using actual mobility histories from two studies. One study of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the U.S., but what I'm showing are just the residential histories, right? There's no implications for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the U.S., nor are there implications for testicular cancer in Denmark. These are completely simulated, fabricated clusters that I've created. I have to remind people that because you'll see clusters and you'll think, oh, Iowa must have high rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's not the case. So these are fabricated. In the U.S., I used two data sets. One was 500 case control pairs, and the second was almost 1,200 case control pairs. And in Denmark, we had 3,300 case control pairs. So this way, we had different sizes of data sets. We created clusters in Iowa, which are extremely residentially stable. People don't move a lot in Iowa, as it turns out. California, we created a cluster. Here we have an area of high mobility. In central Denmark, we created clusters where there were different, it was more of a moderate mobility area. And the idea was, across these different simulated clusters, to present a range of scenarios and see if the approaches worked across these ranges. So our cluster regions in California, this shows locations in 1960. So these were locations that we created in 1960. And we have a cluster in California here, in San Francisco area. And we also have four clusters of increasing size, you see, in Iowa. And again, we created these. And in Denmark, also four clusters of increasing size. Remember, this is a very large data set, 3,000 cases, 3,000 controls. So 127 case cluster isn't even all that large in such a large data set. So we had to specify the number of nearest neighbors. That's the one normal criticism of this type of Kuzik-Edwards nearest neighbor approach. The user has to specify a priori how many nearest neighbors to look for. So we looked for three, and in some cases four groupings. K equal 5 nearest neighbors, K equal to 10, K equal to 15, and K equal to 20. And we ran separate analyses then for each of the 13 simulated cluster regions. The global statistics, the global QK, this is the overall global statistic, only found significant clustering twice, two of the cluster regions. It only found two of the 13. The global QKT, that time slice global, also was conservative, didn't do a good job. When we got down to that local QIKT, if we went down to small p-values like 0.01 or 0.001, it found even the small clusters, but it also found false positives. So it was finding the clusters we created, but it also found other signals as being significant. So we weren't very happy with that, even at these somewhat small p-values. The QIK, that's kind of the local global statistic, the one that says, in general, is this individual the center of a cluster over his or her lifetime? That was our strongest signal, especially when we used a small p-value around 0.001. So the QIK tells us who, and then we had to combine it with the QIKT to say when and where. So we say among these individuals who tend to be centers of clusters over their lifetime, we use the QIKT to say when and where. And this intersection performed the best. Now, still didn't perform great. If you look at the results here, each row here is the result of one of the analyses. So you can see we didn't find any clusters when we didn't create anything for our purely random situation. Our false positives, the largest false positive cluster was only one case here, which is nice. But we didn't find these smaller clusters. It took till we created a size 18 or size 27 cluster in Iowa to find something. And you can see not much different from K equals to 10 or K equal to 15. The California high mobility cluster, we did not find. And I should say, we compared these results with SatScan, which is pretty much the state-of-the-art method for spatial analysis, but it doesn't let you handle mobility histories, so we had to tell it when to look. So we told SatScan, we said, look in 1960. We said, we'll give you the data for 1960, tell us if there's clustering. It also didn't find these smaller ones of n equal to 5 or n equal to 12. So that made us feel pretty good. It did find California. Not unexpected. It's the largest cluster we created. It just wasn't very temporally persistent. It evaporated pretty quickly. So I'm going to show you also just the Denmark results. And again, we didn't find the two smaller clusters, but we found the two larger clusters. Again, not a large number of false positives across all our simulations. The largest maximum size of our false positive cluster was 3 cases. And you can see here we found these two larger with SatScan. SatScan also found the N equal to 90 and N equal to 127, and it also found the N equal to 41. So it did a little better than we did here. I don't have much time. I'll give you a picture of this. This is just gives you a sense of what we're trying to do. When all the purple come together, that will be 1960. That's right there, and that's where we simulated the cluster. But you'll see these purple individuals who we created as part of the cluster, they move, and some move around. Even here in Iowa, where it's a pretty stable population, people are moving, and we're trying to find this cluster, these purple individuals. And you can see the large reds let you know how well we did. And you can see in general, we did pretty well in this scenario, not in all the scenarios. So, to summarize, these are the first simulation analyses. Our results are this type of intersection rule set was ad hoc, and we developed it in an ad hoc manner, but it seems to be consistent with SatScan. We also ran some analyses that were false discovery rate p-value adjusted. There was also significance. There was also consistency there. And choice of K does not seem to be too critical. We would suggest beginning analyses using K equal to 15 nearest neighbors. We don't know how widely this can be applied, right? We only ran 13 simulated clusters here. But we think this is a good start. We'd like to see some work comparing these results with some other approaches in addition to SAT-SCAN, maybe the spatial GAM approach. But in general, we think this is a good start and something worth exploring if you have residential history data in your case control studies. I want to thank you, and maybe we'll, I guess, get questions at the end or something.